Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-TRIM. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Hey, you! Hey, Truth Seeker. Stop whatever you're doing and join in the fun and frivolity for a while, all right? My name is Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? How was your day today? Did you go to the mall? What'd you do? Huh? I really don't care. I'm just saying that. We're trying to have a bathroom redone at our house. I got an email here about Senator Tim Johnson right before the program. Mike, this is from Scott. He writes, Mike, long time no annoy. Anyway, I'm sure you've heard about all the vultures circling, just waiting for Senator Johnson to die. Some people seem to think that the psychopathic governor of South Dakota would be able to appoint a replacement. However, that doesn't seem to be the case. Quote, if a vacancy occurs in the office of a senator or representative in the United States Congress, it shall be the duty of the governor to call for a special election for the purpose of filling such vacancy, unquote. Now, that's in South Dakota state statutes. But all I've been hearing from the Situation Room and other various news holes is that the governor may appoint a Republican, and then Dick Cheney will have the balance of... Oh, my God. Can you imagine when Senator Tim Johnson does survive this, which chances are he will, and may suffer a bit from... What is it? Aphasia, Kathy? When you can't talk for a while? Is it called aphasia? I don't even know.
Dysphagia, I think, isn't it?
Whatever. And he finally recovers his faculties. You know, he'll look at the press reports and somebody will say to him, man, you should have heard what they were talking about when you were sick. I am so over it. What's his name? Wolf Blitzer, the former German U-boat commander who is now works for CNN. He was at it again today. Just can't stop. Just can't stop himself. Chuckle nuts may not know how to solve the problem of Iraq, and we're not going to talk. I'm going to try to avoid too much talk about Iraq tonight. There's some other things I want to talk about. This, well, we'll get to it in just a second. I'm trying to get in the Christmas mood, and I'm also trying not to, you know, drive people listening to this program crazy. Oh my God, he's going to talk about Iraq again. So, I don't have too much to say about Iraq tonight, but Pickles Bush has come up with the solution to the problem of Iraq. The solution? Just stop talking about it. That's all. Just stop talking about it. And everything will be okay. You know, the reason Americans, according to Laura Pickles Bush, the reason we Americans are so down on Iraq is because liberal media aren't reporting the good news. Huh? Right, here we go again. Right, here we go again. The liberal media are not reporting the good news. Never mind the fact that the Iraq Study Group report said the violence in Iraq and the misery and the murder and mayhem and the destruction was actually underreported by the very same media that Pickles thinks is not doing its job. Well, just toss the ISG report down the memory hole. Get rid of it. Didn't it never happened, that report. You know, it is so typical. And let me digress for just a moment. If you've listened to this program longer than a week, you know that this whole entire Bush family, I'm talking about the blood family, the family, disgusts me to a degree that Ma Barker and her boys didn't, that Jesse and Frank James didn't, that, well, I don't know, you know, I mean, there's some really bad characters. But the Bush family, not the Bush crime family, that's their extended, tentacled family, but the Bush family itself, I've never seen anything like this. And people who marry into the family become as twisted and sick. It's incredible. Here's Pickles. And it's so typical of this drug and liquor abusing family. You know, just pop a pill and put it out of your mind. Hand me a soma and a martini, and poof, what war in Iraq? Look at the TV, looky. The children in Afghanistan are wearing white shoes again. I'm happy. I love George Bush. He's liberated Iraq and Afghanistan. Everything's fine. You know, it's too bad we can't all live on Laura Pickles Bush's fantasy island. We're not all privy to such powerful pharmaceuticals. Can you imagine the kind of drugs that they must back up to the rear door of the White House from the pharmaceutical industry for this family of nutballs? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Can't you hear that truck backing up? Beep, 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 beep. Oh, my God. You know, and the thing is, Pickles comes by her insanity, honestly. She was a killer in her own right before she married into the Bush family. She has her own bloody street cred, independent of hubby and her monster-in-law. Mama Bush. Look at these little Negro children here in the Astrodome. This is better than they had in New Orleans. I swear to God, Barbara Bush, the old woman, just forget the physical resemblance. She reminds me of the mother in the first Alien. The one that Sigourney Weaver just was in. Oh, my God. Wasn't that a freaky-ass movie? That movie, I have to say, that movie just scared the bejesus out of me. It really did. It really, really did. But Barbara Bush reminds me of that monster, that mother in Alien. Anyway, Pickles, you got to hear this. Okay, you ready? This was MSNBC's News Live with the host, Nora O'Donnell. Nora O'Donnell is a real right winger in her own right. I mean, she really is. But she interviewed Pickles today, who's just a few Marlboros short of a carton. Boy, I swear to God, she sounds as delusional, Pickles does, as her dry drunk hubby. The reason Americans disapprove of Bush's war in Iraq is because of the media, not because of the lying and the killing and the tremendous human, emotional, financial cost, or because America is now hated worldwide and in greater danger of being attacked because of what her husband's done. No, but because of the media. I thought it was all Clinton's fault. Come on, Pickles. Which is it? Of course, the irony is that we now know, if anything, the media was under-reporting the violence. The media were trying to give the Bush crime family all kinds of props and accolades. Oh, they're doing a great job. But Pickles, like her harridan, the monster that is her mother-in-law, just doesn't want to trouble her beautiful mind with all that. Here's Nora O'Donnell.
Let me ask you then finally just about public opinion when it comes to the Iraq war. At NBC News, we have a new poll out we sponsor with the Wall Street Journal. And the numbers show 2 out of 10 Americans now approve of the president's handling on Iraq. 7 out of 10 less confident that the war will be successful.
Well, I understand why those polls are like that, because of the coverage that we see every single day in Iraq. And it is not encouraging coverage, for sure. There's no doubt about it. But I do know that there are a lot of good things that are happening that aren't covered. Mm-hmm. And I think the drumbeat in the country from the media, from the only way people know what's happening, unless they happen to have a loved one deployed there, is discouraging. And, I know that the facts are not as discouraging.
Yeah.
Absolutely there are. And people do know that and see that. But there are also good things going on that people don't have the chance to see.
What are some of those good things that people should
know
about?
Schools that are being built, parts of the country that are peaceful, and people are trying to rebuild their lives in a large part of Iraq. And we hear that. We hear that from friends. We hear that from Iraqis. We hear it from our troops who are there. And so I'd like to see the media get a little bit more balanced view of it.
Oh, the question O'Donnell put in there, and Pickles just overtalked her. O'Donnell says, but there are a lot of deaths every day. And Pickles answers, absolutely, there are. And people do know that and see that, but there are also good things. And Nora O'Donnell, I mean, she's almost, do you get the tone from Nora O'Donnell? We have a poll we sponsor with the Wall Street Journal, and the numbers show that 2 out of 10 Americans now approve of the president's handling of Iraq. I'm sorry, Mrs. Pickles. Can I light your Marlboro? It's the media's fault. By God, it's the media's fault. Stick around. We have miles to go before we sleep tonight. I'm Mike Malone, Nova M.
Out by right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malone.
22 past the hour. At the bottom of the hour, coming back from the break, I have a letter to read to you from a young Marine who has he's been a Marine for about 2 years. He's in the infantry and spent 7 months in the Al Anbar province in Iraq. He went on more than 180 combat patrols in and outside of the city of Fallujah. He's been hit with IEDs twice. Luckily, he was never injured. He's been involved in a number of firefights. He's currently stationed in 29 Palms, California, due to return to Iraq for a second deployment come April. He's 21 years old, and he's written something, and I'm going to share it with you. And then that's it for the horror that is George Bush's folly in Iraq this evening. A couple of emails here regarding the caller, Harry from New York the other night. This is from Tracy in San Francisco. Tracy writes, Mike, next time someone decides to use your show for a confessional, Harry's the one who just realized how wrong the war is, I hope you will ask him or her this question. And maybe you did. I was out of the room for a few minutes and didn't hear the whole thing. Here's the question. You now realize that the war in Iraq is wrong, that our young men and women are dying not for our country but for someone else's greed or whatever the issue is, described however you would describe it, Mike. Okay, caller, so what are you going to do about it? Now, whether or not the person can come up with much, I'm sure you could offer plenty of suggestions and direct all your listeners to plenty of websites and organizations working on the issues at hand. At first I thought you were being kind of hard on him. After all, he had woken up, albeit way late. But when I came back at the end and he was still doing that you liberals shtick, well, then I didn't blame you for being hard on him. Anyway, even if it takes someone this insanely and unforgivably long to wake up, the really important thing is to end this damn war already, so I hope you will recruit people such as Harry to work for that goal. There will be time after the troops come home to kick his ass for having been so slow. Signed, Tracy Q. Yeah, but the problem with that, Tracy, I've said it in all the time I've been in talk radio, I've always said I'm not here to educate anybody. I would not be that kind of a patronizing radio talk show geek. I'm just not into educating people. B, I don't think I can. C, I've always believed that probably most of the people who listen to this program are smarter than I am. Anyway, I've said before, I have a microphone, and that's about it, and access to the same sorts of information everybody does. But I'm not into educating people, especially not other adults who should know better. When someone calls my program the way Harry did, with this whiny-ass thing about, oh, well, I finally seen the light, you know, I tried to be polite to the guy last night, as polite as I could be, but I would recommend you right-wingers don't call me with your confession. I've said it before. Go to your priest, your rabbi, your minister. I'm not interested. This is from Alicia in San Francisco, too. Regarding the Republican bastards, Alicia writes, who now say they have seen the light, yes, you're right, to hell with them all. We have no time to deal with these people now. Not only did they vote once for these thugs, but twice. And they sure as hell did not overwhelmingly vote against all Republicans in this last election either. Isn't this aiding and abetting and a crime against the American people, the world, and the environment? And so now they say they're sorry? It's too late. They could all just go away. Since we can't lock them all up, just go away, all you stupid, self-centered, lazy, whining, ooh, there's the F word, sheep. Screw them all and go choke on your freedom fries. They have set this country on a collision course, and now they want us to praise them for finally opening their eyes to the information about the lies that was always there from the very beginning? Have I told you how much I hate these people? Alicia in San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Yeah, I get you, folks. I understand. I've never been the good one for confession, you know. I was not raised a Catholic, but I had a relative who thought that I should go into the priesthood a long time ago. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike. Oh, by the way, I didn't. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Before I read this letter from the Marine, Shelby over at RadioPower.org sent me something here. Scott Dickers, who's the editor-in-chief of The Onion and co-author of the number one bestseller, Our Dumb Century, made the following comment when he met Laura Bush. Scott, when Scott met Laura Bush, quote, I was blessed with the good fortune of meeting a wonderful small-town Texas woman who had a dazed and clueless stare reminiscent of a goat that had been struck between the eyes with a tire iron, a halting kind of beauty which every man desires in a woman. Oh, these people are just so, they would be so comedic, so funny, so hysterically, obscenely laughable, except for the fact that they kill people! By the scores, the hundreds, the thousands. Speaking of which, A Young Marine Speaks Out by Philip Martin, combat Marine. Many patrols in Iraq. He's currently stationed in 29 Palms, California, due to return to Iraq for a second deployment April. Philip writes, I'm sick and tired of this patriotic, nationalistic, and fascist crap. I stood through a memorial service today for a young Marine that was killed in Iraq back in April. During this memorial, a number of people spoke about the guy and about his sacrifice for the country. How do you justify sacrificing your life for a war that is not only illegal, but is being prosecuted to the extent where the only thing keeping us there is one man's power and his ego? A recent Marine Corps intelligence report that was leaked said that the war in the Al Anbar province is unwinnable. It said that there was nothing we could do to win the hearts and minds or the military operations in that area, so I wonder why are we still there? Democracy is not forced upon people at gunpoint. It's the result of forward-thinking individuals who take the initiative and risks to give their fellow countrymen a better way of life. When I joined, I took an oath. In that oath, I swore to protect the Constitution of the United States. I didn't swear to build democracies in countries on the other side of the world under the guise of national security. I didn't join the military to be part of an Orwellian war machine that is in an obligatory war against whoever the state deems the enemy to be so that the populace can be controlled and riled up in a pro-nationalistic frenzy to support any new and oppressive law that will be the key to destroying the enemy. Example given, the Patriot Act, so aptly named and totally against all that the Constitution stands for. President Bush used the reactionary nature of our society to bring our country together and to infuse into the national psyche a need to give up their little-used rights in the hope to make our nation a little safer. The same scare tactics he used to win elections. He drones on and on about how America and the world would be a less safe place if we weren't killing Iraqis, and that we'd have to fight the terrorists at home if we weren't abroad. In our modern-day emotive society, this strategy, or strategery, works, or had worked, up until last month's elections. My point is this. To show that America was never nationalistic. If anything, they were statalistic, giving their allegiance to the state of their residence. This is shown in the fact that the founders created states with fully capable and independent governments, and not provinces that were just a division of the federal government. These men believed that America was a place where imperialistic values would be non-existent, where the people trying to make their lives better by working hard, thinking, inventing, and using the free market would tie up so much of normal life that imperialistic colonization and the fighting of wars thousands of miles away for interests that are not our own would be avoided. They believed this expansion of power could be left to the European nations, the England, France, and Spain of their time. However, this recent and current influx of nationalistic feeling has created an environment where giving up your rights, going to a foreign country to fight a people who did not ask for us to be there, nor did their leader do anything to warn us being there, and dying would be considered honorable and heroic. I don't believe it anymore. I don't believe it's right for any American to go along with it anymore. Yes, I know that in the military, we are bound by the universal code of military justice and somehow don't fall under the Constitution, the very thing we're supposed to be defending. But sooner or later, there is a decision that every American soldier, Marine, airman, and seaman makes to allow themselves to be sent to a war that is against every fiber this country was founded on. I know that when April rolls around, I will be thinking long and hard on that decision. Even though we in the military are just doing as we're told, we still have the moral and ethical obligation to choose to do as we're told, or to say, no, that isn't right. I believe that if more troopers like me and the professional military, the officers and commanders, start standing up and saying that they won't let themselves or their troops go to this illegal war, people will start standing up and realizing what the heck is going on over there. The sad fact of the matter is that we are not fighting terrorists in Iraq. We are fighting the Iraqi people who feel like a conquered and occupied people. Personally, I have a hard time believing that if I was an Iraqi, that I wouldn't be doing everything in my power to kill and maim as many Americans as possible. I know that the vast majority of Americans would not be happy with the Canadian government or any other foreign government liberating us from the clutches of George W. Bush, even though a large number of us would like that, and forcing us to accept their system of government. Would not millions of Americans rise up and fight back? Would you not rise up to protect and defend your house and your neighborhood if someone invaded your country? But we send thousands of troops to a foreign country to do just that. How is it moral to fight a people who are just trying to defend their homes and families? I think next time I go to Iraq, perhaps I should wear a bright red coat and carry a brown vest instead of my digitalized utilities and M16. Notice I never once used the word homeland in all of this. I have a secondary point I want to bring up now. Never once was the term homeland ever used to describe the country of America until Mr. Bush began the Department of Homeland Security after the 9/11 attacks. Taking a 20th century history class will teach us that the most notable countries in the last century that referred to their country in this way were Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. Hitler used the term fatherland to drum up support, nationalistic support, for his growing war machine. He used the nationalism he created in the minds of the Germans to justify the sacrifice of their livelihood, to build the war machine to get back their power from the oppressive restrictions the English and French had put on them at Versailles. This is the same feeling that has been virulently infecting the American psyche in the last 100 years. This is the same feeling that consoles a mother after her son is killed in an attempt to prosecute an aggressor's war 10,000 miles away. It's also known as patriotism these days, but I say no more. No more nationalistic inanity. No more passing it off as patriotism. Patriotism is learning and educating oneself to understand what their country really stands for. I heard a lot during the memorial service about how the dead Marine did so much good for others, and how his helping others was like a little microcosm of America helping because we have the power to do so. Well, if we have the power to help people, why aren't we helping in Darfur, where hundreds of thousands of people have died in the last 10 years? Saddam was convicted and sentenced to death for killing 143 Shiites who conspired to assassinate him. I know, all you patriotic Americans would be calling for the heads of anyone who conspired to assassinate Supreme Leader Bush. And yet we spend upwards of $1 trillion and nearly 3,000 lives to help these Iraqis when they don't even want us there. Not to mention, we don't have the legal justification to be there. I guess we should wait around for the omnipotent W. Bush to decide who we should use our superpowerdom to help next. It's about time to throw him and the rest of the fascists out. Moreover, it's about time to start educating Americans about their past history and letting them know that imperialistic leaders are not what the founders of this great country wanted. December 8, 2006. Now, I am sure that somebody will eventually, before this night's over, email me and say that that letter is a fake. But it comes courtesy of LouRockwell.com, and Lou Rockwell, isn't he the one that writes Capitol Hill Blue? Is that Lou Rockwell? I've heard people say that Rockwell is this and Rockwell is that, and you know, I don't know anymore. I sometimes think that maybe there are people out there who think this whole program is just done with machines. I'm a chip in a voice activated computer, and somebody named Dargung sits behind the chip machine every night and does this. That it's all fake. That it's all fake. That it's all fake. That it's all fake. Which is not the case. So I don't know what's true anymore. Do you? I have no earthly idea. But I understand Randy Rhodes read this on her program today also. So there you have it. A young Marine speaks out. The person that sent it to me says someone needs to tell this kid to watch his back when he gets back to Iraq in April. Unfortunately, he looks to me like a good candidate for a, quote, non-combat fatality, end quote. Ah, it's weird, isn't it? It is just so weird. All right, stick around. That's the Iraq business for tonight, unless you all bring it up when we do some phone calls. All right? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. We can.
need more American troops at the moment to quell the violence.
What? What was that? I think Addy had the wrong button. Very quickly here, an email from Jeff. He sent me a link to a Chinese newspaper, English, ChinaView.cn. It's, I guess I'm pronouncing it right, Xinhua Net, xinhuanet.com/English. But here's the story from today. Remember we were talking about the other night about, you know, who is really a threat to the United States? Here's what it says. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday, that's today, inspected the country's newly deployed Topol-M intercontinental ballistic missile, hailing it as, quote, a development other nuclear states do not have and will not have in the near future, end quote. Putin flew by helicopter to inspect a missile regiment stationed in Tykovo, a small town some 250 kilometers northeast of Moscow. It was the first combat duty armed with Topol-M missiles mounted on mobile launchers, the Itar TASS news agency reported. The deployment, said Putin, is, quote, a significant step towards strengthening Russia's defense capability, end quote. The Topol-M missile, capable of hitting targets more than 10,000 kilometers away, have so far been deployed only in silos. The new version, which can be mounted on a heavy off-road vehicle, makes it harder to be tracked down. Russian media cited specialists as saying that the new version has no other missile similar to it in the world. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Ivanov said earlier this year that Russia's strategic missile forces would get 69 Topol-M missiles by 2015. Russia has so far deployed over 40 silo-based Topol-M missiles. Oh, God. I know. You thought the Cold War was over. Oh, no. Well, Mike, you see, they're targeted at the Chinese. Really? Oh, man. Merry Christmas. It's just, it just gets bizarrer and bizarrer. What else we got here? Oh, when we come back from the break, Prairie 2 kind of sets up what I wanted to talk about the other night and got sidetracked on this Iraq stuff. Hey, Mike, in every one of these food poisoning scares, the references, well, you know what the references to. This stuff just keeps happening. The FDA rushes out and announces they're investigating some small to medium-sized produce company, implying that they're guilty of E. coli contamination. Invariably, their suspicions don't pan out. Tests come back negative. No violations are found. Meanwhile, no large company, read that Republican contributor, is ever investigated, and the source of the outbreak is never found. During the spinach scare, they even dispatched the FBI to raid the alleged source, and nothing was found. The government isn't making the food safer, but they are successful in making the business world safer for their cronies. Remember the mad cow scare? The panic it caused in countries that import U.S. beef managed to put all the small farmer-owned packing plants out of business. They were producing high-quality grass-fed beef for export to Japan. Grass-fed cattle aren't fed bone meal products that have the potential for mad cow disease. The big corporate feedlots do, and they use a lot of other things in their cattle feed you don't want to know about. To me, one of the indictable offenses out of many that the Bush crime family has committed is the gutting of the regulatory agencies, and they want more of it. I'm reading in the business section of the New York Times earlier this week, and the effort is on for more deregulation, I guess before the Democrats take control or after the Democrats take control. Corporate America wants even more deregulation. You insane bastards, what do you want? You know, what do you want? I read in today's Times or yesterday's Times, the bonuses being paid by Goldman Sachs to their to some of their hot shot investment people. Bonuses, year-end Christmas bonuses in the millions of dollars to somebody who has done what? Shuffled numbers around? What the hell do you people want? Do you want every damn thing? I mean, is there not even just a few crumbs for those of us still trying to survive in the middle class or the working class? What the hell do you people want? You want to control everything. You want no regulations. You want to be able to dump all your crap in the marketplace. What's your answer? Well, the marketplace will sort it out. Oh, for Christ's sake, 6,000 people a year die from food poisoning. And you're going to talk to me about that? The privatization of everything, we touched on this the other night, they privatized the war, they, being the Republicans, they privatized everything on this sick, false, asinine theory that private business or private industry does a better job than a government counterpart, which is an absolute lie. Two words, New Orleans! I don't know, maybe it's going to take another revolution in this country to make people in positions of power to wise up that there comes a point. By God, there comes a point. There comes a point, and apparently we're not there yet. Because we're not in the streets by the tens of millions. Because most of us still think there's a way to do this without taking to the streets. There's also thousands of us who have given up and said, screw it, we are going to the streets. And you see it every time there's one of these god-awful World Trade Organization meetings or one of these god-awful meetings where these business vampires get together and figure out another way to screw everybody. Well, I'm telling you, the day's going to come when people like you and me have had enough. Really. It's going to happen unless the drift of things turns around and turns around damn quick. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Stay with us. I am pissed off. My name is Mike Malloy. This is NovaM Radio. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. Two very quick emails here. First of all, about Lou Rockwell. Lou Rockwell is Lou Rockwell. That's the website, lourockwell.com, where the Marines letter was published. And the guy who does Capitol Hill Blue is Doug Thompson. Yeah, well, Lou Rockwell, Doug Thompson, they sound the same. Thanks to Lee. And Sarge, when I said the failure of privatization could be summed up in two words, New Orleans, he says, I can give you three other words to go with New Orleans, Mississippi Gulf Coast. Yeah, every time I think about the Mississippi Gulf Coast or the people who, and there's article after article, there was another one in the Times the other day about displaced people struggling to still, 16, 17 months after the hurricane. I find it astounding that this is going on, that somehow we can incorporate it. Those of us who don't live on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, we just incorporate it, file it away, and it sits there. It sometimes scares me what I'm capable of doing, what I have learned to do in the 6 years that this George W. Bush has been president of the United States. What I have learned to do in order to maintain my sanity. Filing, in order to stay alive, I should say, because if I let these things come front and center in my mind, I'm pretty well sure that I would go berserk and have to be shot dead by some SWAT squad someplace. I mean it. But I have learned, you know, how many years of therapy did I do, Kathy, before I met Kathy? But so what, 13, 14 years of therapy. Christ, I need to get back in it. But what I learned to do was how to handle, how to set it aside, how to modify my own behavior by saying, okay, you can't think about that. Set it over here on the shelf. Okay, now close the door. Okay, now lock it. Now turn the light out. Now throw the key into the ocean or whatever the hell little game I used to do. But I've had to do that. I've had to learn how to do that, how to apply what I learned in 13 years of therapy. And if y'all have never done therapy, you ought to go do it. You really should. What? What'd you say, Kathy?
I said, yeah, go do a decade or two.
Well, I needed a lot. I need more. Oh, God. You know, some people do drugs to get relief. I believe in trying to sort it out, find out what the hell, you know, what's ticking in there. You know, why do I do the things I do? You know, I got curious about that 25 years ago. Why do I react? At least now, when I go nuts, I know why I'm going nuts. It's fully justifiable to me. But in 6 years, I've had to learn to do that, to look at those images from mainly from New Orleans, Sarge. I realize Mississippi Gulf Coast, too, but the media focused on New Orleans. To look at those images, to see those people screaming and crying, and corpses, Jesus Christ, people rolled over to the side of the road, left to die. And realize now that's not some country in Africa struggling under some ongoing 30-year-long civil war with a tyrannical dictator supported by U.S. oil company. No. That's my country. And I had to go, okay. Get a grip. And somehow, I got a grip. And this Iraq stuff and just everything. Have you not found the same to be true? Have you? Here's what I've noticed, and I mentioned this the other day. Atlanta has the worst traffic situation in North America. It does. I'm sorry, it does. L.A. is a breeze. Forget about it. San Francisco, no problem. New York City, Atlanta is horrifying. When I moved back here 35 years ago, there were barely 1 million people. Now there's 5 million. And every one of these sons of bitches has to get on the road at the same time. It's unbelievable what happens down here. But you know what I have found out? I have discovered that in the past 3 or 4 years, pretty much paralleling Bush's war, the attitude of people on the highway has gone right in the toilet. It's unbelievable. I see middle-aged white women and middle-aged black women on cell phones while they're driving on Interstate 25, which is this huge beltway that surrounds Atlanta, flip me the finger because they're drifting into my lane, and I go beep beep, just like, hello, I'm back here. I have a 2-year-old strapped in the back. Beep beep. Thank you. It's unbelievable. The aggression, the anger that people are feeling, and you know, I mean, there've been reams of studies on this about how people take out that aggression when they're behind the wheel of a car. I'm telling you, get back in therapy. Did you do therapy? Huh? Any of you? Have you all done therapy? You haven't? You better go do some. Your insurance will cover it. Don't worry about it. Oh my God, I need to go back, Kathy. I've been out of therapy for about. What, about 6 years? I need to go back. I need to go back. Oh, my God. Whew. All right, I want to get this call in because it's about the Philip Martin, the Marine statement. This is from Vicky, who's calling in from Buckley, Washington. Hey, Vicky.
Hi. Hi, Mike. I read Philip Martin's letter about a week ago, and I thought, well, this young man has a conscience, so I emailed him, and I asked him not to go back to Iraq, and I asked him to become a conscientious objector. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping more people will email him, because to me, the Democrats aren't going to get the troops out of there. Bush sure as hell ain't, so the troops may just have to do it themselves.
You know, it just may come to that. If it hasn't already, I don't know how many of the guys over there are really gung-ho, kill them all, let God sort them out, and how many of them are questioning rationally and logically, as this Marine is questioning what the hell we're doing there. I hope there's a lot of them that are questioning policy. I hope it's the case, Vicki.
Yeah, because if he goes back over there, he's going to be forced to kill to survive, and it seems to me like he's pretty sick of everything he's already had to do over there.
It does seem that way.
That's all I had to say.
All right, thanks, Vicki.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. All right, take care. The myth of private companies being able to do things better than government agencies, that has been an ongoing myth that has been pumped into our collective consciousness since the Reagan years, prior to the Reagan years. But, you know, privatize everything because the free market, which is an absolute lie. There is no such thing as a free market, not in this country. It just doesn't exist. And a fair market has never existed. Capitalism is not about fairness. It is about a form of social Darwinism that is perverse, that is threatening, that is murder to the family unit. There is no more of an anti-family economic system than capitalism. And we might as well accept that and face it and deal with it. Figure out a way to deal with it. Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, tried to figure out a way to deal with it. All the agents, Teddy Roosevelt, who set up the forerunner to the Food and Drug Administration as a result of the publication of Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle. That talked about, you know, humans falling into the meat processing plants in Chicago and winding up on your breakfast table in the form of a sausage, you know, whatever. But the mythology that somehow privatization is better than the collectivization that certain industries, certain processes in a society require has been one of the part of the canon of these right wingers. Oh, well, that's private. Now, the Bush crime family has taken it to its insane, utterly absurd, furthest outpost. These sons of bitches have privatized a war. They privatized a war, for God's sake. The last time we had that in this country, it was the Hessians, wasn't it? Wasn't it the American Revolution? And weren't they? They were fighting against us, weren't they? Who knows anymore? But Paul Krugman, a couple of days ago, had a column in New York Times, and when we come back from this break, I want to share a little bit of it with you because it kind of also ties in to the fact that you and I, every damn time we go to the grocery store now, unless we go someplace where we know the produce is and the meats, if you still eat meat, and I do, is locally grown, you're taking a hell of a risk. I mean, it's just getting to that point, and it's getting worse, because the Bush crime family, they don't give a tinker's damn about food safety. What they care about is food profit, so that some of it funnels back to the Republican Party. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam. Now don't get us wrong, cause we love America, but that's no reason to get hysterical. Now lay in on the serum, cause we ain't waffles, we ain't having it. In a world going out of trouble, think right. So much violence, say that's right. We're going out all day.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Krugman's article of a couple of days ago in the Times, and of course Paul Krugman is one of the most astonishingly honest and usually right-on writers working for the Gray Lady. According to U.S. News & World Report, Krugman writes, Bush has told aides that he won't respond in detail to the Iraq Study Group's report because he doesn't want to outsource the role of commander-in-chief. And Krugman writes, that's pretty ironic because outsourcing of the government's responsibilities, not to panels of wise men, but to private companies with the right connections, outsourcing of the government's responsibilities has been one of the hallmarks of this administration. And privatization through outsourcing is one reason this administration has failed over and over and over again. Krugman cites an article in last Saturday's Times about how the Coast Guard has run a $17 billion modernization program. And there were some bits about this in today's paper, too. The Times wrote last Saturday, quote, instead of managing the project itself, the Coast Guard hired Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, two of the nation's largest military contractors, to plan, supervise, and deliver the new vessels and helicopters, end quote. Now, what's the result? Oh, my God, if you've been following this, the result is ships that aren't seaworthy, that cost tens of millions of dollars. The Coast Guard ignored repeated warnings from its own engineers that the boats and ships were poorly designed and perhaps unsafe, while the contractors failed to fulfill their obligation to make sure government got the best price, frequently steering work to their subsidiaries or business partners instead of competitors. This thing with the Coast Guard is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It started out at $17 billion. I think it's up to $21 billion. And the Coast Guard is going to wind up. Who responded? What was the only organization that responded effectively, as effectively as they could, to the Katrina disaster? That's right. The United States Coast Guard. And the privatization of the upgrading of their equipment has just gone into the toilet. It's unbelievable what this Bush crime family continues to do in Afghanistan, where for some reason they figured they needed a new police force. Oh, for Christ's sake, they don't need a new police force in Afghanistan. They need to be left the hell alone. Those people are very content to live in the 15th century. Let them live in the 15th century. Oh, no, we want democracy in Afghanistan. Three words, Alexander the Great. No, two words, the British Empire. No, one word. Oh, two words, Soviet Union. Empire after empire after empire has been taken apart in Afghanistan. And there we are. So the job of training a new police force was outsourced to DynCorp International. A bunch of thugs, if ever there were a thug company, this is it. When conducting a recent review, auditors couldn't even find a copy of DynCorp's contract to see what it was supposed to do. But DynCorp has sucked $1.1 billion out of your and my pocket for a police training program that Afghanistan still doesn't have. $1,000 million gone. DynCorp, run by people who suck up to the Bush crime family, Republican Nazis. In July 2004, Government Executive Magazine published an article titled Outsourcing Iraq, that documents how the U.S. occupation authorities had transferred responsibility for reconstruction to private contractors with no oversight. The only plan, this article said, appears to have been to let the private sector manage nation building on their own. And Pickles Bush sits there with the Noron on MSNBC and says, well, they're not reported. Can you do it? Can you do pickle? Oh, you got a cold. Can you do pickles? They're not reporting the good. Do pickles.
Well, I'd have to have just a little bit more Xanax to do pickles tonight on top of the antihistamines. But
right.
We're just not hearing about the good news that's going on. There's children flying kites. There's people wearing white shoes. There's schools that are being rebuilt and bombed and rebuilt again and again and again. And it's a wonderful place to be. Our friends are telling us that. Some of them are spending Christmas there. Lots of the troops are. But some people you know won't be coming back.
On the home front, the Bush administration outsourced responsibilities of FEMA. For example, the job of evacuating people from disaster areas, like what happened in Katrina, were given to a trucking logistics firm called Landstar Express America. When Hurricane Katrina struck, Landstar didn't even know where to get buses! There's more! But bring up this music. There's more. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Open your eyes. Time to wake up. Love is enough. Is enough. Is enough. Is enough. Is enough.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Now back to this privatization issue that Paul Krugman wrote so eloquently about the other day in the New York Times. He writes, it's now clear that there's a fundamental error in this anti-government ideology that has been embraced by today's conservative movement. And I would add, of course, it's not just today. This really did start, but it had an awful lot of impetus added during the Reagan years. Conservatives look at the virtues of market competition and leap to the conclusion that private ownership in itself is some kind of magic elixir. But there's no reason to assume that a private company hired to perform a public service would do better than people employed directly by the government. In fact, the private company will almost surely do a worse job if its political connections insulate it from accountability, which has, of course, consistently been the case under Bush. You know, I have never seen an organization like the Bush crime family that consistently rewards failure over and over with their medals of freedom and their awards here and their awards there. Even as government auditors found that Landstar, the company that could not, didn't even know where in the hell to go to help evacuees, even as the auditors discovered this company was useless, they received a plaque from the Department of Transportation honoring its hurricane relief efforts. I've never seen an organization like the Bush crime family. The constant reward for failure. But that's what's happened to George W. his entire life. This man has never had a success in anything. He has always had his family or his family's connections or the Saudi royal family or the Bin Laden family bail his ass out. Whether it was school or the military or business, always he has failed, and always he has been rewarded for the failure. This man did not get elected to the presidency. He failed, but it was given to him. He was not reelected. Those votes were stolen, but it was given to him. Over and over and over, this Republican Party, this nest of anti-Americanism, this clutch, this huge fascist religious clutch of Republicans in this country who don't give a damn about America's middle class or the working class or the old people or the children or the poor or the veterans or the military or anybody. But for some reason, as long as they oppose gay marriage, as long as they try to inject themselves into a woman's personal privacy regarding an abortion, there are people out there who will continue to vote these pigs into office. And the pigs will continue to eat the people who put them there. That's the part that is astonishing to me. The Republican Party should be marginalized, have its ass kicked up around its ears, and sent out of the house, out to the outhouse, and stay out there, sit out there, read the Sears catalog, grow up, go away, get out of here. Krugman says, underlying this lack of accountability are the real motives for turning government functions over to private companies, which have little to do with efficiency. To say the obvious, when you see a story about failed outsourcing, you can be sure that the company in question is a major contributor to the Republican Party, is run by people with strong Republican Party connections, or both. Contracting failures in Iraq helped us lose a war. Similar failures in Afghanistan are helping us lose another. FEMA's failures helped us lose a great American city. That's one of the reasons that as shaky as it was, Hillary Clinton's health care plan from way back in 1993 was just ripped to pieces. Because the right wing in this country convinced us dumbass Americans that somehow the Hillary Clinton plan was government single-payer health care, which it was not. It was to be run by private companies. But nobody knows that. Remember the Harry and Louise commercials? Well, Louise, you know, there's an effort made to take our health care away. Do you remember all that garbage that these rat bastard Republicans did? So here we are. Here we are, 13 years later, 45 million Americans without health insurance, that's one out of six, no health insurance, most of whom are women and children. This is great. This is really wonderful, isn't it? Huh? Let's pat each other on the back and say, nice job. The ungrateful bitches and their little children, they don't deserve health care. This is a Republican mindset. Privatize it. Social Darwinism. To hell with everybody else. Give me my $10 million end-of-the-year bonus for making lots of money in derivatives and hedge funds and all this other bat crap that does nothing to advance this society. Nothing to advance the middle class or the working class. Nothing. Goldman Sachs. Did you read that in today? Is it today's New York Times? Jesus, God, I about choked on my cornflakes. Millions of dollars in bonuses paid to a company that does nothing. What the hell does Goldman Sachs do? And it's not just them. And then this question, Eric Schlosser, are you familiar with him? He's the one that wrote Fast Food Nation. And he also wrote Reefer Madness, not the original Reefer Madness back in the 30s, but the recent Reefer Madness, which, by the way, is a very, very funny book. Smoke a joint and read it. Eric writes, this fall has brought plenty of bad news about food poisoning. More than 200 people in 26 states sick and the 3 people killed by spinach. 183 people get salmonella from tainted tomatoes served at restaurants. 160 in New York, New Jersey, and other states sickened with E. coli after eating at Taco Bell. According to the CDC, 76 million Americans, what's that, 1 in 4, are sickened. 325,000 are hospitalized and 5,000 die every year because of something they ate. And as Schlosser points out, part of the problem is that the government's food safety system is underfinanced, poorly organized, and more concerned with serving private interests than with protecting public health. Now, why do you suppose that is? Who's in charge of the government's food safety system? Republicans! Do Republicans care about the health of your child? Oh, hell no! Do they care about the health of your old mama who's 85 years old and all she needs to push her into the grave is a little touch of E. coli poisoning? Do they care about? Hell no. Ugh. Schlosser points out that over the past 40 years, the industrialization and centralization of our food system has just made it almost damn certain that there are going to be huge outbreaks of food poisoning. He writes that today only 13 slaughterhouses process the majority of the beef consumed by 300 million Americans. 13 slaughterhouses. I don't like that word, slaughterhouse. Slaughterhouse 5. Schlautenhaus Fien. I don't like the word slaughterhouse. Abattoir. Meat processing plant. 13 slaughterhouses process the majority of the beef consumed by 300 million Americans. He goes on to say, while threats to the food supply have been growing, food safety regulations have been weakened. Since 2000, the fast food and meatpacking industries have given 80% of their political donations to Republican candidates for national office. In return, these industries have effectively been given control of the agencies created to regulate them. The current chief of staff, the Agriculture Department, used to be the beef industry's chief lobbyist. The person who headed the FDA until recently used to be an executive at the National Food Processors Association. The only thing that should be processing food is your digestive system. Cutbacks in staff and budgets have reduced the number of food safety inspections conducted by the FDA to 3,400 in the 70s a year. In the 70s, it was 35,000 a year. It just goes on and on. Privatization. The Republicans are destroying America. The Republicans are destroying America. They have to be stopped. And at this point, I don't care how it's done. They have to be stopped. I believe in doing it legally and peacefully. But by God, if my family's life is at stake, what am I supposed to do?
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right. Madam Producer?
Wouldn't you like to read some passages now from Upton Sinclair and share them with the... No,
I just truly wonder sometimes how much we are supposed to deal with before we say, okay, that's enough. I mean, I really do. I think the average person out there, among whom I certainly include myself, I think we put up and accept so much, and we accept it quietly unless we get on a radio show or in a bar or maybe with the few friends we have left that we can really let our hair down and scream about this crap. But I think the number of people who are reaching critical mass about so many issues in this country, I think that number is growing, and I think that there is a so-called tipping point at some point, even though there is a facade of success in this country, mostly, I think, generated by the fact that people over the past 5 or 6 years have withdrawn hundreds of billions, if not into the 10 figures, of home equity money out, that I think has kept the economy going. Underneath this facade of relative success, I drive down the street, I see these behemoth vehicles every place you look, and I just think to myself, how is this happening? And a cynic would say, well, because the economy is good, Malloy, you're crazy. The stock market is over 12,000. NASDAQ is, approaching 2,700. What are you whining about? And I know that is not neither the stock market nor somebody's big vehicle is an indication that people in this country are content. and poll after poll after poll where people are asked, you know, how do you feel about the way things are going? It always comes up negative numbers here lately. I remember back in the middle of the tech boom, admittedly a huge percentage of which was wishful thinking back in the 90s, especially the late 90s. If you remember when NASDAQ was up around 5,000, and there was a feeling in this country, not a single American had died in foreign combat in the entire 8 years of the Clinton presidency. Granted, the Clinton administration had ordered the deaths of people all over the world, but, you know, just thinking about us, not a single American soldier died in combat in 8 years. Crime was down across the board. Why? Because there was a fascistic attempt to throw people in prison? Well, the prison population was rising, but what kept crime down, I think, for the most part, was the fact that there were jobs, and there were good-paying jobs. Or is it correct to say well-paying? On the other hand, I think... In terms of population and in raw numbers, the United States now is in the top two or three where it concerns how many of our people are in prison on parole or probation. We lock up so many people now. What is it? One out of every 260 people is enmeshed in the criminal justice system. A huge percentage of those people, of course, are there because of these stupid damn drug laws, every one of which should be taken off the books. But I do. I wonder sometimes how much, what the tipping point is, where is this going to, or when is this going to reach a point where what's left of the American middle class, I mean, really, I don't mean the middle class that's living on credit card debt and home equity money and just going out of its freaking mind trying to figure out how next semester's tuition is going to be paid. I mean a real solid middle class that is slowly being strangled. You don't believe me? Listen to Lou Dobbs, who is no liberal like moi. But how much longer before we say this has gone far enough? It's literally gone far enough. It's our country. It's a system of laws that were set up to benefit eventually everybody who lives here. Didn't start out that way, but over the course of time, we have modified or tried to modify our system of justice so that there was true justice. But I just wonder, and we're still a long ways from it, and we're drifting away from it, and how much longer are we going to put up with this? No justice, no peace. Does nobody understand what that means? Economic justice, social justice, justice in the workplace. No justice, no peace. Justice comes first, not peace. Justice. And I think some black folk have been trying to tell some white folk that for a long damn period of time. And I'm just wondering why people don't listen. No justice, no peace. No justice, no justice, no peace. And I again, my, I wonder sometimes how much more of this we're going to take before we say, okay, we gave it a fair shot. Remember the four boxes to be used in a specific order. Ballot. Or soap, ballot, jury, ammo. Your phone calls when we come back, 800-989-1480. Let's just bring it on. 800-989-1480. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Excuse me. One email, and we're coming to your phones. This is from Ward, who listens in Japan. Mike, every time I suggest to people will become awakened when they turn off their televisions, or that war in the Middle East will end when the developed world turns away from its over-consuming energy ways, or that E. coli and salmonella outbreaks will stop when people stop eating meat. The often answer I often get, even from you and other progressives, is, well, we know that isn't going to happen, or why can't I just live my life in peace, or it's corporate America's fault, and blah, blah, blah. There's your answer. The vast majority of people in the USA, Ward writes, even the ones who say they hate Cheney and Bush really agree with Cheney when he says the American way of life is not negotiable. No one wants tainted food. They don't want wars. They want to protect the environment, but change the way they live? No, gosh, there's that word again. No effing way. And they expect someone else with some power somewhere to magically make the meat industry safe, steal all the energy they need without firing a shot, and provide the American lifestyle without polluting the environment. It is delusional thinking. Ward, Japan. P.S. I practice what I preach. I am vegetarian. I use a bicycle rather than a car. I live in a small, energy-efficient house, etc., etc. What have I said? Oh, well. No argument for me, Ward. All right, let's go to your phone calls. You know, if I were to practice what I preach, I would close down the studio and quit, because how much energy do we pull here with this equipment, Kathy? Huh? Let's start with Ron, who's calling from Wellsboro, PA. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I wasn't going to ask you that, because I hate that when the people call in and going, how you doing? You know, you're just like talking about stuff with like such great import. It's sort of like the seems are almost inappropriate.
Well, no, I think it's very
appropriate. Well, I do mean to be polite at least, right?
Right, right.
Well,
you're,
I mean,
you're to be commended for that.
Regarded to your tipping point question, I mean, I don't know whether to vomit, cry, scream, or bash my head against the floor. I've been blogging on your, you know, the Mike Malloy blog about that, with that question for months and months and months, you know. Mm-hmm. And thinking about what you're talking about, food. I mean, come on, back when Reagan, one of the first things he did when he came, it was like, you know, fire a bunch of meat inspectors. Mm. You remember that whole, like, thing about the ketchup is a vegetable thing, you know? You know, and it's just amazing to me. That was one of the first things he did right after the air traffic controllers and his sort of, like, union-busting frenzy. You know, it's just like Adlai Stevenson said, in a democracy, you get the government you deserve. If you sit on your can, someone's going to tell you how to live. They're going to feed you. You know, what they tell you on TV, you need to eat. You're going to drive the cars that they tell you you're going to drive. And you know what? You're going to lose your liberty. And I wonder about that all the time. I walk down the street like you, and I watch these people drive by oblivious in their cars and on their cell phones. I'm like going, God, don't you care about your country? What do you think about your country, your fellow countrymen, your fellow citizens, the ones who help define what your life is? You know, I think about that constantly.
Ron, do you ever think people like you and me and the liberals out here and the progressives, that we are railing against stuff that is pointless to rail against, that really what we ought to do is just kind of go with the flow? I mean, wasn't that the message that came out of the late 60s? Go with the flow. I mean, if everybody is trying to drive Hummer 3, whatever the hell they're called, go get one. If everybody is, you know, chomping down on 3-inch thick steaks, go eat one. If everybody is, you know, paying real close attention to what Nicole Richie is doing, pay close attention.
Here's the only problem with that.
Yeah?
UNICEF says that every minute, 21 children die between up to the age of 5. Of preventable causes. Every minute, 21 children disappear. So yeah, you can have your steak, and you can drive your Hummer around, but what kind of world are we living in? You know what I mean? Where we allow that to happen. Where we can just turn our backs on that. That's 29,000 children, 30,000 children a year that just disappear. Like a deluge of young, innocent people disappearing for a way of life that just is just so rapacious. I mean, look, you know, you can still, like, probably drive your motorboat up to the North Pole, you know. No one's talking about that, or if they are. I think the reason why people don't get out is there's just too much. I mean, I'm so balled up emotionally all the time, you know. I can't even watch, like, some sappy thing on television. I end up just, like, weeping. You know, I just weep over the stupidest stuff now because, you know, I feel heartbroken, you know. Yeah. All that junk they taught me in physics or in civics, you know, my civics class in high school. I really believed it.
Yeah, me
you know?
Too. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people like Howard Zinn, I'm like, oh, man, he is the man. I love him.
Right.
You know? And, but I don't know. People are just, you know, they're getting all, you know, balled up on their couches, you know, with their high-carb diets, you know. And, you know, in deference to Gordon in Japan, you know, 50 pounds of grain to a pound of beef. That's what we're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah, Ward in Japan. But you're right. Yeah, the conversion of energy from one source into beef energy is astonishing. Astonishing. There's an argument made that the decline of the human race is going to be environmentally and physically is going to be tied directly to the production of beef as a basic food. I frankly hate this stuff. I really do. I eat a lot of fish, but it's getting harder and harder to even do that. You know, anyone who eats farm-raised fish is eating poison.
Wow, the mercury content is so high.
Well, it's the pesticides. It's the parasites. Farm-raised fish. And you know what's available now in one of the big supermarket chains here in the South, Kroger? I don't know if they have it up north. But
no, I know the chain. It's a big chain.
Yeah,
they own
the big chains.
They're huge, right? They're like, go ahead.
You go to the frozen fish section. I'm not talking about the breaded garbage fish. I'm talking about, you know, real fish fillet. And you go and you look, and there's a tilapia, which is a very mild white fish that I will buy at the farmer's market here. I'll buy it when it's wild because Molly will eat it, and it's very low on the mercury scale and so on and so forth. But what they're selling now is frozen tilapia raised on farms in China. And it says product farm raised product of China.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I was wondering about that. When was it going to start happening that they're going to start outsourcing food production?
Right, and we all know that the pollution problem in China is turning out to be even worse than it was in the Soviet controlled Eastern Europe when the wall came down. And all of a sudden, all the Eastern European countries were liberated from Soviet control, and people looked at the environmental damage done by the great thinkers in the Soviet Union over since 1917. The damage was incalculable. Well, now in China, it's even worse. So I've read. I don't know. If somebody wants to email me from China and say it's not the case anymore, fine, let her rip. But when I see packets of frozen tilapia coming from China where it's raised on fish farms, automatically I know that that's poison. You eat it, you die.
What about the fruit out of season? Like, you know, down in South America, they can use DDT. They don't have an EPA down there. Yeah, you get your Chilean plums. Take a big bite. You don't know what the heck you got in them, you know?
Right. Every once in a while, just for the sheer hell of it, at the farmer's market here in Atlanta, we will buy what are labeled to be organic tomatoes from Mexico. You bring them home. If you can stand to eat them, they taste, I don't know, they're absolutely tasteless. But after about 3 days of sitting on the countertop, they turn into black mush. Hey, Ron, I got to go. Thanks for checking
right,
in.
Mike,
take care. Keep your chin up.
We'll be right back, man.
We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
It's a fine-looking bird, isn't it? I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
All right. Maria is calling from San Francisco. Maria, welcome to the program.
Mike, I'm sorry. Mike Malloy, this is a first-time caller, so I might be a little nervous.
Yeah, well, you're going to make me nervous if you say that.
What?
That you're nervous.
Well, I am.
If you get
because
nervous.
I've been listening to you for 3 years now almost, and you've just about saved my life. And when you went off the air, I was just lost.
Yeah, well, we're back.
I know, and I listen to you and Randy Rhodes, and thanks to you, you've also led me to Ray Taliaferro.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you kind of just mentioned his name one night, and here I live in San Francisco and had never, he's been on radio, and I had never heard of him before.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, tonight the subject of food, you were speaking about food, mad cow disease, whatever, that
right.
You don't eat beef.
Right.
And, by the way, am I on air now?
You sure are.
Oh, my goodness.
People are listening to you across the globe.
Is that right?
Yeah, now don't be nervous. But
well, I am a little nervous because what I want to tell you, talk to you about is, you know, we've been in the country right now. Everybody's been concerned about the food contamination, like
right.
Onions. They think it's lettuce or
right.
Whatever. But I want you to understand that I guess the best way to start off explaining to you is when they have biological warfare experiments,
uh-huh.
What they do is they take bacteria and they grow it, and then they can make it an aerosol, disperse it, and, you know, it's been done. People know about it here in San Francisco. Because there was once two bacterias that that was released, Pseudomonas aeruginosa and Serratia marcescens, and these are two bacterias that is commonly found in the soil. But since our government was having this experiment, mainly to probably counteract other governments' experiments, you know, in biological warfare, these experiments were done. But they didn't understand how it could patients who were immunologically compromised could develop serious situations, you know,
right,
because
right.
of the fact that maybe they were just having an operation or they whatever, you know, and they died from it. Well, since we're in the sort of pro-fascist government. situation now. Sometimes I think that when I hear about the strains that are found, in, as a result of these, when they find out that it was E. coli,
uh-huh.
You can easily. People don't understand how you can easily grow this bacteria in cultures.
So you're what I'm getting here is you think there might be more to this than just accidental food poisoning.
Yes, I do think that just like and sometimes I have a hard time imagining people who are in the field, say, for example, with the National Security Agency that listens in on people's,
right.
you know, conversations. Well, how could people who understand and work with bacteria, say scientists or people with a bacteriological experience, you know,
mm-hmm.
as technologists and whatever, could do these things. But when we had that anthrax situation, you remember that, don't you?
I do indeed.
Okay. I know that when he had the labs that was growing this in his government labs, I know that our government know they could have easily found out which lab was doing it.
You would think, wouldn't you? I mean,
yes.
I don't know why that was has remained an unsolvable case.
Well, it's like everything else that's top secret and in the hands of a select few
mm-hmm.
that would make people not tell. Now, there are some brave people that would come out and say things, you know, whistleblowers.
Right.
But today, that's like...
You're real concerned about all this, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
And I have been for a long time. That's why when I found your station, it's just that it was so... it was like a person who is not easily who have eyes covered. You know, like most people don't want to believe things.
Uh-huh.
And I just I've been in love with you and Randy Rhodes and the whole Progressive Station ever since. And I already have my ideas, and it's very hard for me to even discuss this, you know, over the radio. But
I
just thought that they have millions of people listening to this, and other people who have knowledge of the idea of how this could easily be. You could take a plane that normally spray, the fumes and the. I'm thinking of disinfecting, but that's not what I want to use.
Well,
the pollution.
Maria, let me just say, I've got a break here. This
yeah.
is your first time calling. I hope you call again. Don't be scared. Everything has got to work out, but stay in touch.
But listen to our conversations, as you know.
Yeah, we want to hear from you again, okay? All right, thanks, Maria.
You're working hard to put food on your family.
Stupid bastard. All right, from Lauren in Canada, she writes, "Hi, Mike. In the 50s, the American government released pink clouds of Pseudomonas aeruginosa bacteria from the top of buildings in Winnipeg, Canada. This bacteria was chosen as it was easy to detect in urine and thought to be harmless in order to see how it would spread through a city. Unfortunately, in some people, it caused kidney infections and sometimes kidney failures." Oops. "The recent E. coli stuff is, I suspect, due to Bush and the food industry cutting back on quality control. But it is a good illustration of how easily food can be tampered with." Lauren, that was in response to our caller from San Francisco about... you know, airborne poisons. I just want to add a postscript or an addendum to what the caller said. Maria, you know, it's very easy to write that kind of stuff off. Well, let me give you an example. More and more frequently, this happens to me, and I'm sure it happens to you. I'm walking someplace. Thank God it's not out on the walking trail that I walk every day. But if I'm in town and I'm walking someplace, I'm in a mall, I'm walking across a parking lot, I'm going to pick up stone tiles for the bathroom or whatever, and someone will be approaching me, and they're just talking a mile a minute, and they're all by themselves. Now, when I grew up, that was an indication of someone who was mentally unbalanced. Now it's an indication of someone who's on a cell phone, on one of those earpieces, those things that plug into your head. You know, boy, when those people start developing their brain cancers, I wonder if they're going to think, damn, I wish I would have spent more time on the cell phone. But, you know, perception is 9/10 of reality, right? Who said that? My caller, Maria, who was talking about the possibility of, you know, the E. coli contaminations being some government plot, it's very easy to say, well, okay, thanks, Maria, but how close to the truth could she possibly be? Remember, when I see and you see people walking, you've had to adjust, haven't you? You've had to adjust. So that when you walk by a bus stop and somebody's sitting on the bench just talking a blue streak. And, you know, 10 years ago, not even that long ago, when that would occur, you'd cross the street, go, uh-oh, crazy person, and move away. Oh, I know that's not politically correct, but that's what you would do because you don't know. The person might leap up and pull an ice pick out of her purse and stab it through your temple. So, but we've changed. We had to adjust so that we see somebody coming towards us who's talking with that kind of blank stare, that thousand-yard stare in their eyes, we immediately think, okay, not crazy person, person on invisible cell phone. So when Maria or Lauren or anybody talks about these, the possibility of these illnesses not being just random occurrences because of poor regulatory processes, let's not write them off as just people who are, you know, talking nonsense. I think for the most part, these apparent random food poisonings, whether it's meat or vegetables or fruit, whatever it is a result of a process of kind of monitoring the market that has disappeared. Regulatory processes, cracking down on companies that do this sort of thing, that know damn good and well that what they're putting out in the marketplace is contaminated, with that is going to cause a certain number of people to get sick, but they weigh the odds, just like Ford Motor Company used to, about their vehicles, and they figure, well, why put the $3 part on? If we put it on 10 million cars, that's $30 million, and the most it's going to do is kill five people and figure $6 million per death. So there we got 30, you know, the way it works. That's the way it works. That's the way it works with corporate America. Is it cheaper to repair the problem or to go ahead and deal with the lawsuits? And in so many instances, they figure it's cheaper to deal with the lawsuits. But as far as foodborne illnesses, a number of which are fatal. I mean, who knows? Who the hell knows anymore? Common sense tells me that the person I see sitting at the bus stop talking into the thin air is mad. Just absolutely bonkers. But as I get closer and see the wire dropping down out of the little button in her ear, down into her breast pocket where there's a cell phone, then I have to reevaluate and say, well, no, she's not crazy. She's talking on a cell phone. 15 years ago, she's crazy. Now she's not. 15 years ago, it's foodborne illnesses. Now, I don't know. I just wanted to toss that in. You can toss it right back out if you like. Pete is calling from Phoenix. Pete, welcome to the program.
Yes, welcome back to the air, Mike.
Thank you.
Kathy. I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening to you for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And I'm delighted that you're back on the air. I wanted to comment about a couple of things. First, I commend Ward, who called in earlier about his lifestyle.
Well, he actually sent an email.
Oh, email, okay. But
right.
He's walking the talk, and I commend him for that. If more Americans did that, we would be in a much better situation than we are now.
Yeah.
But I wanted to comment about a couple of other things. The problem with what's being sprayed in the air, nobody's mentioned chemtrails, and that's a big issue. But I want to refer your readers to a book, which is very informative. Dr. Leonard Horowitz has written a book. He is originally a dentist, but he also has a master's in public health.
Uh-huh.
And this book is subtitled Globalism, Terrorism, and Toxic Warfare, Death in the Air by Leonard Horowitz.
Yeah.
And it talks about chemtrails. It talks about experimental spraying, like, was it Maria?
Uh-huh.
San Francisco was talking about.
Right.
It's chapter and verse. It's a 421-page book.
Uh-huh.
Highly recommend it. But that wasn't the main reason for my calling. The main reason is to share some late-breaking news regarding 9/11.
Okay.
And that is on prisonplanet.com, which is Alex Jones's website.
Yeah.
There's a story posted today by Paul Joseph Watson. It is entitled, Boston Air Traffic Controller Says 9/11 an Inside Job. This is a former Boston Center air traffic controller has gone public on his assertion that 9/11 was an inside job, that Donald Rumsfeld and the Pentagon tracked three of the four flights from the point of their hijacking to hitting their targets. And apparently he was interviewed in an astounding telephone interview. His name is Robin Horden. And he claims that air traffic controllers have been ignored or silenced to protect the true perpetrators of 9/11.
Okay, you know, I've gotten emails from the guy you're talking about, and have quoted him on the
air. Have you had him on the air?
I think I've just talked about the emails that he sent. But anyone who wants to get this, just go to Alex's website.
Yep. Then go to there's a story. It's posted today by Paul Joseph Watson.
All right.
It's entitled "Boston Air Traffic Controller Says 9/11 an Inside Job."
Yeah, I'd like to read that and see what this person has.
And I commend you for you know even bringing this subject up, because a lot of the left leaning or progressive leaning talk show people are skirting this like it's the plague. They don't want to discuss it. Randy Rhodes has been talking about it a bit more, but some of the other you might say left gatekeepers.
Yeah,
they're just ducking this subject like it's the plague.
Well, you have to admit it's a difficult topic to get into. I've said for a very long period of time that I totally do not believe the official story put out there about what occurred in this country on September 11, 2001. Mm-hmm. I usually follow that immediately by saying, you know, I have no idea what did occur. I've certainly heard various theories, but I don't believe the official story. And the reason I don't is for a couple of reasons. There are too many unanswered questions. But mostly, I think, is that the story comes from the same people
right.
who lied this nation into a war.
Exactly.
And my feeling is simply if they will lie to the extent to get Americans to commit their young people and their financial resources to fight a war based on lies, then they will in fact lie about anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever the situation
right.
is, they will lie about it. So I can understand the reluctance of some people on the left to get into the topic, because you really have to... You have to kind of put yourself out there and say, okay, we're going to talk about something tonight or this afternoon that is pretty edgy, but I think it needs discussing. And that can be a little bit frightening for liberals. Hey, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you very much.
Call us again. We'll take a break here and come right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Mike Malloy, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Our program was engineered tonight in Phoenix by Ian Huff, who also handled the flood of incoming phone calls. Thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Thanks to the moderators at the message board at MikeMalloy.com and Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this nonsense. Back to your phone calls. Who do we have here, Catherine? We have Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm doing just... Well... Hi, Marge.
You know, all this stuff about the FDA and how lax they are. Once upon a time, it took 5 years or better to get a drug approved by the FDA. Now, if you're real lucky, 60 days, you know, maybe 6 months, and it goes zipping on through, and you don't know what the hell what they're approving anymore. So, I mean, good luck. But
you know, a lot of that was in response to the foot dragging that occurred around development of AIDS drugs, drugs that would provide some help. At least it was looked at that way 20 years ago when AIDS was just breaking into the population, the general population. And, you know, I'm of a mixed mind about this, Marge. in some instances.
Yeah, if somebody's dying and there's a possibility that something's on the horizon and that might do them some good, fine.
Right.
But, there's so many.
But there's a,
there
you're
was
right.
Something
there,
that was just
recalled
in the last couple of days that, or they stopped testing it because it was killing people.
Yeah, you can make an argument both ways, and I think both sides of that argument are valid. The pharmaceutical companies, I think, in so many instances, will rush through drugs that are not life-saving drugs. They may have therapeutic value, but the one thing that gets them on the marketplace very quickly is the fact that they're going to generate an enormous amount of profit. I'm serious.
You think that's what drives them, Mike?
I swear to God, that's the reason, Marge, honest.
Shucks, golly gee.
But the real reason you called.
The real reason I called, I was listening. I happen to have Channel 5 or NBC on tonight, and they were talking about the good senator from South Dakota and his surgery in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
And the fascinating part, and I didn't pay close enough attention, they had a list of people scroll on the screen that I don't know if they were just generic elected officials, were all senators or members of Congress or what, but one of them who had remained in office even after they had a similar
life-threatening.
Who was on that list that I sort of blinked and sat up and took notice?
Joe Biden.
You saw it too.
Well, no, I remember it.
I
remember when Biden was absent from, I think he was a senator then, or was he a I think he was a senator.
But something like 6 months?
Yeah, back in the 80s, when he had a stroke of sorts. I realize stroke is kind of a generic term, but he had bleeding in the brain. Joe Biden did, and he was gone for months. And I don't remember all the commentators talking about, this is going to change the balance of power, even if it wouldn't have. I mean, these vampires that exist now in the so-called media, Marge, this is just revolting what they have been talking about since this senator.
Well, that was the lead story on ABC last night. George Stephanopoulos was out there, giving it over, Gibson.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's just, doesn't it make you proud to be an American? To watch these ghouls and vampires operate?
Yes. That's the term, ghouls and vampires.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they have got about as much
compassion.
I would just, that's their definition of compassion, compassionate conservative. Is that where we're going?
No.
I think I may gag.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. I said earlier tonight when Senator, Johnson? Is it Tim Johnson?
Yeah, I think it's Tim Johnson.
Right. When he finally recovers from all this, which he probably will.
I hope.
And has a chance to, somebody's going to say, yo, Tim, take a look at the video of what was going on when you were unconscious or sick, what they were saying about you. Take a look at this. He's going to look at that, and he's going to have a real stroke.
No kidding.
Oh, my God.
I was thinking, what 60 years can do, things sort of start rewinding in your brain. That's what FDR died from. But in those days, they called it a cerebral hemorrhage.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, so modern times and changes in treatment and all different kinds of stuff, and they can... Gee, golly whiz,
it's miserable coverage, and I hate what they're doing, and it's disgusting, and you know what, Marge? There's not a damn thing we can do about it.
No, once upon a time, there was enough reporters going around in a given setting that was maybe up on the medical, or maybe up on foreign relations with wherever the hell.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe up on the shuttle service. They sort of studied a particular field, and when a story came up in that regard, it was theirs to cover because they knew what the hell they were talking about.
Right.
And now they just seem so matter-of-fact, and what's the line? If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said, it just makes you want to gag.
Well,
so
I'll
anyhow.
Tell you what, you get to close the show tonight. Thanks a lot for checking
well, take
in.
Well, are you going to be there all week next week? Or are you taking off for Christmas or what?
No, we're taking off next Friday night and Monday, which is Christmas, and that's it. We're going nowhere. We're going to be right here doing the program.
You get the Superstation Channel 9, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Okay, Christmas Eve, this is Central Time, 10 o'clock,
yeah.
And Christmas Day, 1 o'clock.
All right.
This is for Molly.
All right, I'll
get
do it.
Get a VCR and, you know.
I'll do it. Thanks, Marge.
Take
we're out
care.
Of here. Thanks for checking in. Thanks for participating, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.